The following is a synopsis of the sichas of the nights of the 4th, 5th, and 6th day of the week, and also of Shabbos, Kedesh, of Parshas Truma, Hey Tavshin and Beis, corresponding to 1992. The Rebbe discusses the significance of the month of Adar. Adar is a month of simcha, a month of joy. As the Gemara, as the Talmud says, Mishenichnas Adar marbim besimcha. When you enter into the month of Adar, you increase in joy. So if every month of the year we have to begin with a blessing, how much more so in this month, a month that is filled with blessings. Moreover, the Rebbe says, there's a question that is asked on the very phraseology of the Talmud. Just like you enter into the month of Av, you diminish, you decrease your joy, so too, when you enter into the month of Adar, you increase your joy. That's how the Talmud introduces this theme of increased joy, the month of Adar, which is puzzling that they should try to compare the joy of Purim, the month in which we celebrate Purim, the month of Adar, with the month of Av when we have Tisha B'Av, the saddest day of the year. It's like saying, just like you have to cry at a funeral, that's how you have to rejoice on Simchas Torah. The fact that you're mentioning the month of Av, that itself engenders a sense of sadness. So the answer, the Rebbe says, is the Gemara is trying to tell us that through the joy of the month of Adar, we could transform the darkness and the sadness of the month of Av and transform it into light, into joy. So that means that the month of Adar actually has two qualities. Number one, it has a blessing that it gives us joy, and the greatness of joy is obvious. But it also has another advantage because it's the month in which we have the capacity to transform the negative things that happened in the month of Av, transform them into good and into blessing. And of course, up until, including the ultimate blessing, the blessing of the true and complete redemption, take it from Yad Mamish, immediately, imminently. Generally, the month of Adar begins with the Parsha of Truma, as it is this year, the year in which the Rebbe said this talk. And what we have to do now is to find the connection between the Parsha and the month of Adar. This year, the Rebbe said, is a leap year, the year in which the Rebbe said this talk, and is the beginning of the first Adar. And also, Rosh Chodesh occurs on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. So we have to discover the connection of all these things to the Parsha of Truma. So the Rebbe describes the content of this Parsha. It's about God's command to Moshe to take contributions for the construction of the Mishkan, to take these contributions from the Jewish people. And he lists what he wants from them. He says, this is the offering or the contribution that you shall take from them, gold, silver, and copper. And the Rebbe says, this is puzzling. Why does it begin with a command to give gold? It should go in a ascending order. First, you give the cheapest, the least significant of these three metals, copper, then silver, then even gold should go in that order. Moreover, since ultimately we're talking about a command that is given to the Jewish people, and you have to consider the fact that there are different levels of wealth amongst the Jewish people, so it would have been more appropriate to begin with a contribution that is more common and more accessible to most, the silver and the copper, but not the gold. True, the Jewish people left Egypt with great wealth. As our sages said, that every one of them had 90 donkeys laden with silver and gold. But that still doesn't justify the fact that you begin with gold, because the Egyptians had less gold than they had silver and copper. That's why when the Jewish people despoiled the wealth of Egypt, it was primarily silver and copper. The reason that gold is more expensive, because it's not as common as silver and copper. So then why focus on the least amount that would be given, which is gold? and put that first. The truth is that also the Mishkan itself needed more silver and copper than gold. So you can't say that the reason why gold is mentioned because they needed more of it. And it's more significant because that is also not true. Number one, because the stones, the Avni Shoham, the stones that they used were more significant and they're mentioned at the end. And number two, when the commandment was given for the contributions, two things were relevant here. What they can give, the more one can give, of course, the more that was appreciated, but also what was necessary for the Mishkan. And as far as both of these considerations are concerned, silver and copper should have preceded the gold, because the Mishkan needed more silver and copper, and that was more accessible level of giving for most people. And also, we have to learn a lesson from this. Everything in the Torah has to teach us a lesson. So what is the lesson that gold is mentioned first amongst all the contributions to the Mishkan? An additional question. The command to contribute to the Mishkan was given to all of the Jewish people, men, women, and children. And again, this is puzzling. We're not talking about a house like any other house. We're talking about a house that was unprecedented since the time of creation of the world. God himself, the Holy One, blessed is he, about whom it is said, the heavens and the heavens of the heavens cannot contain you. The heavens can't contain God's glory. And yet in this physical world, in a physical structure, God will indeed dwell. So if you follow simple, healthy logic to create such a phenomenal creation, you need very, very special people, people on a very high level. So how could it be that every man and every woman was able to affect this phenomenal experience, such a novelty, that God should contain himself within a physical structure? And this contribution had to be given in the right way. It had to be given for God's sake in his name. As it says, V'yikhu li truma, they should take unto me, God says, an offering. When we know that some of the men and the women and children were not always serving God for the purest of motives, and yet everyone was involved in this contribution. So the explanation is that this command to build a Mishkan was given after Matan Torah, after the Torah was given. From the time the Torah was given, from the time that God said to each and every Jew, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am God, your God. That means I am God and I am your power. That created a bond for every Jew with God. It's a bond that is incapable of unraveling, even as the Jew is a soul within a physical body. From the beginning of Matan Torah and onward, it doesn't make a difference what the Jewish person's external appearance is. The inner content of every Jew is that he's one with God. And therefore, even if it seems that a Jewish person is on a lower level where he's serving God, not for his sake, not in the purest of ways, and he's not really sincere in the way he serves God, that's true externally. But the essence is that every Jew loves God and wants to do his will with love. That's why every Jew has the opportunity and the ability to build a dwelling place for a God, a Mishkan, because even in this physical world, the Jew is one with God, and he serves God lishma for his sake. That's why everyone has the power to make this physical world one that is receptive to God's glory the way it was in the Mishkan. Now we can understand why the Torah begins with gold with regard to the contributions to the Mishkan. Gold, we know, is not just another category of metal. Gold symbolizes that which is most precious. And that's why when we come to check on how much they needed gold in the Mishkan, or how many Jews have the capacity to give gold, from that perspective, gold would not have been mentioned first. But here, the Torah mentions gold first, not as a separate thing, but the way it's connected to the Jew. We're talking about the golden Jew. And when we look at the state of every Jew is gold. And he's first and foremost connected to and capable of contributing the gold, which is what he is all about. This is the power that every Jew has to build a Mishkan, because every Jew is essentially gold. His whole being is unified with God himself. And that's why he can build this dwelling place for God down here in this physical world. Now, this point is connected very, very tightly with the month of Adar, because the month of Adar is a month in which it is said, Bari Mazle, that the mazel of the Jew is very healthy. True, it says that Jews don't have a mazel, a constellation. They're not governed, and they're not affected by what happens in the stars. So Rashi says that that means that the mazel of the Jewish people is subject to changes, because every Jew is really higher than nature. So he has the power through prayer and the like to change his mazel. But that's generally speaking. But the month of Adar is unique. Not only is that the mazel of the Jew is subject to changes, changes for the good, but from the very beginning, without any effort, the mazel of a Jew is in the strongest state and is always healthy. And also, in Chassidus, it is said that when the Gemara says, Ein mazel Yisrael, there is no mazel for the Jewish people, we have to translate it differently, that Ayin mazel Yisrael, the state of Ayin, of nothingness, of total surrender to God, that is the mazel of the Jewish people. So we understand then that if the month of Adar, the mazel of the Jewish person is healthy, that means that in the month of Adar, we have this state of total surrender and submission to God in the most healthy and the strongest manner that could be manifested. And that's the connection that the month of Adar has to the Parsha of Truma, because what does Truma indicate? That every Jew, no matter what state he's in, is gold. That means his spiritual state is strong and healthy. And that gives the Jew this power to be totally surrendered to God, which is his true essence, his gold. That gives him the power to build a Mishkan. And that power is especially strong in the month of Adar. This is also the reason why it says when you enter into Adar, you increase in joy. Because since a Jew knows that no matter what situation he's in, he's connected to God, even in the situation where his soul is within the constraints of a body, that is the greatest joy that can possibly be. And when a Jew is happy, the joy increases enthusiasm and vitality in everything that he does with himself and things that he does with others. And through this, he merits also the world, the life of the world to come. We can see this more specifically in the days in which Rosh Chodesh occurred in that year, when the Rebbe said this. The Rebbe says it occurred on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. Now, Tuesday and Wednesday are the third and fourth days of the week, respectively. And when it comes to the number three, Gimel, and the number four, the Gemara, which is Dalet, the Gemara says that they are an acronym for Gemel Dalim, bestowing kindness to those who are poor. The reason why the Jewish people are called Dalim, poor, and God is the one who bestows his favors, his bounty to them, which is Gemel, bestowing, why are they called Dalim and not Rushim, another word for poor, is because every Jew is always connected to God. And that's hinted in the letter Dalet, which has a little spitz, a little dot coming out of it on the back of the Dalet, unlike the Resh, which doesn't have it. That is an indication of the central core, the Nekudas Hayadus, the point of Jewishness that every Jew possesses, the gold, the essence of the Jew that is pure. And the lesson from all of the above is that every Jew has to be rich spiritually and also materially, literally. And not just that every Jew has to be rich, but every Jew is rich, and his function is to reveal this and to actualize it if it's not wealthy in the most revealed state. As of yet, one has to actualize that which is there already within. And this is especially true now that we're standing on the threshold of redemption. We already concluded all of our service that we had to do to bring us to this point. So it's certain that God blesses every Jew with wealth, and the function of every Jew is to make an effort to become wealthy spiritually, wealthy through Torah and mitzvahs, and even materially, so that he can perform his service to God in a state of peace of soul and the peace of the body. There's also an additional lesson that we can learn from the Parsha of Terumah to build the third base of Migdash in actuality. As God says in this Parsha, Asuli Migdash v'shechanti b'seichem, make for me a sanctuary and I will dwell in them. And from this we derive the lesson that is applicable to us, that we have to build the third base of Migdash by Melech HaMashiach, as the Rambam says, and every Jew has the obligation, as we just said, to contribute and participate in the contributions for the base of Migdash, including children. The truth is that now we already educate little children to give tzedakah from their personal funds so that it's easier for them to give and to contribute to the base of Migdash, because they do have the funds. In addition to that, we also have to start the rejoicing even now with the greatest joy, because from the very beginning of the month, one gets the strength for the entire month and months of Adar in the year. The Rebbe said this one, where we had 2 months of Adar. So it is very obvious that we have to begin the rejoicing in actuality, and we do that through study of Torah and performance of the mitzvahs, about which it says, Pikudi Hashem Yisharim Misam Chilev, God's commandments are just, they bring joy to the heart, and this means very literally to rejoice and to cause others to rejoice in your family and your environment. And the essential thing is that the true and complete redemption shall already come in actuality. Then we'll have the complete joy, as it says, Oz Yimal Yischaik Pinu Ulshineinu Rina. Then our mouths will be filled with laughter and our tongues with song, and we will all go to the Beis HaMikdash, take it from Yad Mamish immediately, without any delay. A summary of the synopsis. There's something that we find concerning the building of the Mishkan that is puzzling, that is really phenomenal, in spite of the fact that it was the most innovative thing that happened, unprecedented, that God should dwell in the physical world, God who was above all the spiritual worlds and cannot be manifested even in those high, lofty worlds. Where will he be revealed in this physical world? Nevertheless, this goal does not happen through spiritual people, people on a very exalted level, but it happens through every single Jew, men, women, and children. So how could that be? True, the building of the Mishkan actually happened through and under the direction of Bezalel, but the contributions came from every single Jew. And the explanation is that the building of the Mishkan took place from very exalted people. Every Jew is exalted. From the time the Torah was given, every Jew had this bond with God that cannot unravel. So it makes no difference how the Jew appears in the external form, because internally every Jew has a portion of God literally in him, and everything he does to serve God is done with love, true love, even if it's not always visible. That's why the godly power that every Jew possesses gives them the privilege and the opportunity and the ability to refine the world and to cause God to dwell here in the physical world, in the Mishkan. Now, the beginning of the parasha, when God says we should contribute to the Mishkan, he begins first with gold and then silver and copper. And the question is, amongst the Jewish people, there were more people who can give silver and copper. Those should have been mentioned first. And number two, the Mishkan needed more silver and copper than gold. Why is gold mentioned first? And the Rebbe says, based on the above, it makes a lot of sense, because we're not talking about gold simply as another metal. If it was just another metal, a little bit more precious or a lot more precious than the others, it wouldn't have been mentioned first. But here we're talking about the state of the Jew who's giving the contribution. And the Jew is first and foremost gold. First, he's connected to gold, and the gold is divine connection. And that's what gives him the strength, as we just said before, to build the Mishkan. This is also the reason why there's such simcha in the month of Adar, because every Jew knows that in this physical world, in whatever state he's in, he is connected to God, in spite of the fact that the world poses a obstacle. But there's no greater joy to recognize this, and especially in the month of Adar, when the mazel of a Jew is strong, without any effort on his part. It's just a natural state when our mazel, our inner core, is much stronger. And that's why when we enter into this month, we increase in joy, because we recognize this identity that we have, that we are connected to God. And the Rebbe says that the deed is the essential thing, and the Rebbe gives 4 instructions, practical instructions. Number one, a Jew has to make an effort to become rich in actuality in all matters, spiritual and also physical. Number two, to increase in matters of joy, whether it's with regard to oneself, regard to bringing joy to others, and one's family as well. Number three, first and foremost, we have to increase with the joy that is associated with the study of Torah and the observance of mitzvahs, and literally with joy. And number four, whoever does this earlier is more praiseworthy, and the more you do is more praiseworthy in all these matters, and to increase every day in the joy that each day should be a greater joy than the day before. Some highlights from this sicha, from this talk. The characteristic of joy is that it permeates every aspect of a person. When a person is joy, he lives a joyous life. It's joy that has an effect in everything that he does and with everything in which he comes in contact. And he also brings others to a state of joy. And this simcha that a person has brings success in everything that he does and in his whole life, as we see this in actuality. That means in addition to the fact that simcha brings you to the world to come, as the Talmud says that there were two people who were comedians, and they would bring joy to other people that they deserved, they merited to be members of the world to come. So simcha brings you to the world to come, but in addition to that, you become a master of this world, a true resident in this world, because the life that you have in this physical world are true life, joyous life, and very successful. The Rebbe also added, in this generation, which is the last generation of Golos, of exile, and the first generation of redemption, after we concluded all the efforts, and all that we need now is to just greet and welcome Mashiach in actuality, so it's certain that God blesses everyone with wealth, with gold, materially and spiritually, to the point, just like in the days of our departure from Egypt, so will God show us wonders in the future, that it says about the Exodus from Egypt, there was not one single Jew who did not have 90 donkeys, Libyan donkeys, laden with the silver and gold of Egypt. And now some excerpts from the book, Besuras HaGeula, the announcement of the redemption, the excerpts from this talk that deal specifically with our preparation for redemption. The Rebbe says as follows, in our generation, the last generation of exile and the first generation of redemption, after all the requirements have already been completed, and it only remains to actually greet our righteous Mashiach, it is certain that God will bless every Jew with golden riches, materially and spiritually. This blessing will be such that as in the days of your going forth from the land of Egypt, that God says, I will show you wonders now. So therefore, every single Jew will have no less than 90 Libyan donkeys with him, loaded with the wealth and gold of Egypt. This is in order that one should use the wealth, the gold and the silver and the copper, to make of one's own home a sanctuary and temple to God. As it says, I will dwell among them within each and every individual. And this is also done through giving tzedakah to build synagogues, houses of study, which are in the simple sense a small sanctuary. Further, and this is the currently essential requirement, the third base of Mikdash must be built in simple reality. After all the explanations of the verse, make me a sanctuary and I will dwell among them, including the explanation within each and every individual, we shouldn't forget that a Torah verse does not depart from its simple meaning. First and foremost, it means the practical legal meaning of this text is that Jews have the obligation to build the Beis HaMikdash. In regard to us, this means to build the third Beis HaMikdash in simple reality, according to the ruling of the Rambam, that it will be built through a righteous Mashiach. As it says, he will build the temple in its place. And the Rambam states that everyone is obligated to build and assist with their own efforts, with their money. That includes men, women, and children, as with the sanctuary in the wilderness, in the desert, that when they built the Mishkan, everyone participated. It's obvious that this is also relevant to the third Beis HaMikdash, that every Jew will participate through his contributions, men and women. It may be suggested, and even children, as it was with the gifts to the tabernacle.